I had the pleasure of sitting down with John Ensley, who's a bank on yourself representative and has been doing this for over 10 years. And we talked about the power of the book itself, which you'll learn more about Pamela's amazing book. You'll learn about how he's helped people for over 10 years. And he has success stories. He has examples of not success stories. We talk about frameworks of when to use your policy, when not. He even at the very end talks about his framework of how he gets people to take action and live the life that they love. And he also talks about how his love for sailing, how he's used his policy to do things like build a sailing company and actually do what he loves. I think it's an amazing conversation and would love for you to check it out. Hey guys, it's Caleb Williams with John, welcome to the Better Wealth Show.
Caleb, thanks for having me. Super excited.
I'm excited to have you on because I didn't tell you this as when you popped on, but the Bank on Yourself book was the second book I've ever read on the journey of trying to figure out how life insurance works. And I read R. Nelson Nash's book, and it was awesome, but it was like I still had some questions, and I just was a little bit confused in some areas. And you know, now looking back, I took Nelson's book a little too literally, whereas I should have just like got the concept. And so I read Pamela's book, Bank on Yourself Revolution, which we'll have down below. And that really started opening my eyes to, okay, this could be a strategy that could be integrated across the board. Since then, I've never interviewed someone that was a part of that organization or specializes in their firm. I think we would all agree that we do very similar things at the end of the day. But I'm excited to have you on. I know that you have personal stories about how you've integrated this in your own life, and then I know that you work with clients all over the country and probably have some unique stories there. And so, welcome to the show. And there's lots of questions I have for you, but I would love for you to give a 2 to 3 minute like overview. If we're going on a short walk and you want to give context of who you are, why you do what you do, I would love to get that context before we jump in.
Absolutely, I'd love to. So actually, my journey in terms of the books is kind of similar to yours. The first book I ran into was Nelson's book, Becoming Your Own Banker, and that was through. So right after the 2008 crash, I should start here. In the buildup to the 2008 crash, I decided to make a real estate investment. I bought some property in Washington State, subdivided it, and the plan was to build some spec homes. And of course, in the buildup to the bubble there, everything looked like it was just going to be amazing, right? And I was about halfway through the first spec home, building it in 2008, and that whole thing just kind of imploded. So that kind of acted as a real wake-up call. I literally just got wiped out in this investment, and that made me start looking for information. Right, what am I not understanding? What did I miss here? And so, in the course of many books, I ran across actually on a webinar one night, an advisor was talking about this thing called the infinite banking concept. I'd never heard of it before, never heard anything like it before, and so it intrigued me. I actually had a really terrible attitude about life insurance. Time,
same.
Right? Why would I want to be worth more dead than alive, right? That kind of thing. But it intrigued me. This cash value concept intrigued me, and so I found Nelson's book, and got more intrigued, right? And so I started looking for more information, and I ran across Pamela's original book, Bank on Yourself, that was published, I think, in 2009. So set up my own Bank on Yourself policies. I found a Bank on Yourself advisor in Portland, Oregon, and set my own policies up. And I just got really excited and really passionate about how this works. And the fact that I'd been to so many financial advisors over the years and never heard anything remotely similar to this. And it absolutely should have been part of the toolkit in these real estate projects that I had started. And so I was ready for a career change. And in 2012, I got licensing, and I went out to New York City and actually did a infinite banking agent training program. And then I completed Pamela's, back then it was the authorized advisor program. Now she calls it the Bank on Yourself professional program. So completed both of those and started my practice in 2012.
Amazing. And you've been helping families ever since?
Ever since, yep.
That's amazing. What for you was the epiphany to obviously I had a bad attitude about life insurance. I think majority of people do, just because it's like, why why would I care about this? Let's just buy term and invest the difference. What was the epiphany for you when you're like, oh, not only do I want to do this with my own money, but I actually want to like dedicate my life into sharing this message with other people, which is kind of like next level. It's like the next level weird, you know? And so what was the epiphany that got you on that journey?
So in the course of all the studying, of course, I learned a lot about fractional reserve banking and some of these concepts about where money comes from and how Wall Street uses that system and a lot of that kind of thing. And what it all comes down to is control, right? What I came to realize is I had really no control with some of these systems. And what I instantly recognized with the infinite banking concept when I started learning about it is it put me in control. It put me in control of the financing equation of my money and what I wanted to do with it, with as little outside influence as possible. And that was the real epiphany for me. And in the people I knew personally and acquaintances through the corporate work that I did before I started my practice, I knew that this is something people want. This is what they don't like about the current systems is they have no control. It seems like these events happen, it's completely out of their control and half their retirement is gone or house goes upside down or whatever the case. So it's all about control.
Yeah. I think the epiphany for me, and it's very similar, is this concept, which I call controlled compounding, which it's like, we saw the power of compounding and the power of what compound interest can really get you in the future. I think that's what I've fleshed out more of, like, it's not just the internal rate of return and the growth rate, but it's actually like what that actually will result in the future. But it's having that and having control and not having to choose between one or the other. And I think a lot of people in their financial decisions they make, they're making a choice. They're controlling, but they're giving up a potential better future. But by control, they could be making moves and that could be great. Or you could lock up your money and just compound for the next 10, 20, 30, 40 years. It's great, but what is the value of control? Some people should do that because controlling money is actually a negative thing. That's where I hope we can talk about some negative sides of when people do infinite banking and bank on yourself, because it's a foundation, but you still got to build the house. Yeah. And some people are not good at building houses. And so I think there's in anything, it's not just all rosy-eyed glasses. Cool. And that would probably be my one critique of Pamela's book is, you know, it was amazing for when I first got started. I'm like, this is amazing. But I was like, she almost makes it sound like you can use your policy and you should be going on vacations and buying cars. And while it still is more efficient than maybe using cash because of opportunity cost, I think what sometimes that gives us is like, oh, like we're just going to get rich going on vacations and buying cars. Whereas I think what I would say is like, hey, if you're already going to do that, then let's have a conversation about the most efficient way. But it's not like, let's not get it twisted that you're not like, it's just not this magical thing that's going to save your marriage and all the things, but it's an amazing foundation. I'm curious your thoughts on all the points that
so
I made.
So I talk with clients all the time as we go through the education process, and that, you know, that's a key point as well. You know, there's a process to this, and it's going to take a while to walk someone through to a point where they can really make an educated decision about this is good for me. And I view my role as helping them make that decision, not to sell this to them. So I explain to clients all the time, it's not free money. That's, I think, what happens is they fund the policy a little bit and they've got some cash value in there. And then, oh, wow, I can take this loan and I can go do XYZ with it. And it feels like it's free money, right? Yeah. Like it just came out of the sky somewhere, but it's not. You put the money in there, right? It's your money. And it's just like any other place you might keep your money. You have to treat it with respect and care and caution when you go into anything. And you should always have both an entry and an exit plan anytime you take a policy loan, right? What's the repayment? What's the exit plan? How is this going to work and over what time frame? That should be part of the equation every time. Yeah. And I think that's the part that gets missed, you know, in the zeal to market a concept, which I appreciate because the people need to know about this. But in the zeal to market it, sometimes the silver bullet kind of comes through that this is the cure for everything. And of course, that's just not true of anything. including Bencom herself or bank.
Yeah, I'm going to ask you a question that you may have never been asked before, and it's not necessarily an amazing question. But do you have any examples that you know of or of your clients that have used, you know, infinite banking overfunded life insurance, and it hasn't what are the mistakes and downfalls that you've seen, because you've been in this space over 10 years? I'm sure you've seen cycles. What are some of the tells or stories of how people misuse their life insurance policy and are worse off because of it?
For sure. So there's two examples I like to use. One is actually not a client, but here's why. So this young lady was referred to me at one point by someone. She had inherited an amount of money, not that much, $15,000-$20,000, something like that. And she desperately needed a car. And someone told her, oh, you've got to put that money into a whole life insurance policy and then borrow it out, finance your car, right? You have to do it, call this guy, right? And so I have a conversation with her and I realized pretty quickly that she essentially has no resources other than this windfall she just received, which means there's no way she's going to pay a policy loan back in any reasonable time frame. So after the conversation, I essentially did not recommend, right, that she use that money. You know, you desperately need a car, go get a car. There's no reason to do this. However, you should start saving, right? So if you want to get something small going, when you have some extra money and then start building it up, absolutely, this would be a great way to do it. But this isn't the solution for your car. So I use that quite often as a great example of where it's not the right fit, right? There has to be some resources there to repay a loan as if you were going to finance whatever that is from anywhere else.
Yeah, it's a place to save and store, but if you don't have much to save or store, it's not that useful.
Exactly.
If that's the case. And so I appreciate you sharing that, because if you have an income problem, I would focus your time, energy, and even resources, and make yourself more valuable. And then, then as you have the first world problem of like, hey, okay, what do I do with my money that I'm starting to make? Then it's a powerful conversation. But I think what I find is a lot of people, they're like debating what they should do with their $200 a month. And I don't want to make light of anything. Like, everyone's got to start somewhere. But it's like, okay, we could have this conversation, or we could change our energy instead of saying like, how is this going to be compounded or whatnot? How do I make 400 or 600? I mean, we live in America. You could literally be clearing thousands of dollars a month. And like that it's my understanding that it's hard to have both. It's hard to think about, you know, one side versus the other. And so that it's just a way of thinking of like, I appreciate you saying that, because it's not right for everyone. And sometimes people should be focused on what's going to create the first world problem to begin with.
Absolutely. Yes. If we have an income problem, fix that first. This is, I always call it a receptacle. It's a place to hold and store excess cash. So you have to be able to put some excess cash in it in order to build it up to a useful level.
What was the other story that you had?
So other examples are, every once in a while, I try to prevent this from happening as much as possible, but every once in a while you will run into someone who, they'll take a policy loan, and usually the first red flag is, I'll call you in a couple of weeks to set up the repayment program, right? And so there's been a couple of situations where, despite my encouragement, people just don't pay them back.
Yeah.
And so, you know, time goes by, and of course there is interest associated here that is going to, if you're not making payments on it, that is going to pile up, so to speak, in policy. Fortunately with these policies, there's ways to deal with that once you do realize you need to deal with it. It's never any terrible stories, but that would be another example of, feeling like it's free money. I'm just going to borrow this, do this over here. And they kind of forget about that. They thought it was free money. They forget and they've got to pay it.
Going back to what you said about the understanding the exit, how am I getting in? How am I getting out? I would say the mistake that I've seen is people taking a policy loan and not realizing risk into the equation. It's like, I'm going to make 12% over here. I'm paying maybe 5% here. That's 140% spread. And it's, the math is true, but the problem is the due diligence on the quote unquote 12% investment wasn't there. And so it's like, on paper, that looks great, but we didn't factor in risk into the equation. And there's a possibility that, you know, you have nothing over here, you know? And so it's like, yeah, you have your policy. Yeah, it's continuing to compound, but you have an outstanding loan. But like, you could point to, was it the policy's fault or is it the individual's fault who made that decision? And I think it's like a universal, right?
But no, the policy is agnostic, right?
Yeah,
it, I mean, it works it works.
It will, yeah, it will do the exact same whether you borrow against or not in many cases. Yep. And it's not going to make your investment amazing, but it might give you the ability to make that move. Before we jump into some of the success stories, because I know you have plenty and I know you have an interesting story yourself, what is your framework for when people want to use a policy? Like, do you have a framework of when you should borrow, when you shouldn't, and how you coach your clients or people that you teach around that? Because that's a question that we get quite frequently.
Yep. So I don't have like a file of rules that I go to, but it's an individual situation, right? I try to be very interactive with clients, so I want to have a conversation. What are you doing? Why are you doing it? What are the details? You know, I have an example of a client recently that's along this topic that wants to do a syndication. He wanted to do a syndication deal, and he was pulling a pretty large amount out of his wife's policies to do it. And he had, based on the information he got from the syndication operation, he had an idea what the outcome was going to be. I was very excited about it. I said, send me everything they sent you. And I was able to look through it all and then build out a spreadsheet and kind of say, okay, here's the best case scenario. Here's the worst case scenario, right? This is the most likely how it's going to work out for you. And it wasn't quite what he thought it was going to be, the most likely scenario, but it was still good. And, you know, so he went forward with it. He did it. And it's going to be a 7-year thing and it should work out really well for him. But it was important to me that before he did it, he knew all the information, right? Yeah. This is the worst thing that could happen. This is the best thing that could happen. And this is probably right in the middle here, probably what's going to happen. That way he's fully aware, eyes wide open, you know, no surprises or as few as possible.
Yeah. I think that's great. What I always say is the cost of controlling that money, which is the loan cost, you need to factor that in and you need to value whatever you're using that money greater than the extra cost that it's costing you via the loan. So in an investment, it's super simple because, you know, it's like, hey, if I'm borrowing at 5 and earning 4, I just lost 20% on that transaction. Like that's not good.
Yeah.
But if
that's where he kind of went off the rails a little bit with his calculations was the cash flow during the 7 years. He was kind of just taking the whole lump sum over 7 years and doing his calculations with that, but he wasn't really factoring in this year by year offsetting the interest and the policy and so forth. And so it came out differently than you expect.
Yeah.
Once you actually.
Yeah. But it's interesting. It's like if people go on vacations and cars or do certain things, like that's not a total turnoff for me. You just have to understand that that's not free. Like you have to understand like you are incurring that cost. And so what I do, I don't know if you recommend this, but like if someone's going to, you know, get a mortgage or look at, you know, buying a car, I always ask them, look at all your options. And there's a world where some of our clients got bank loans, especially when the interest rates are super low. And so it all comes down to efficiency and opportunity cost. I don't know. Do you, I know there's some people that are like very, very, we have to take away the Fed. And the way that we do that is by our life insurance policies. Where are you on the spectrum? Like, are you like all, I'm going to use my policy for everything because the Fed is evil? Or are you more of like that, hey, I'm going to do what's best for my family. And if it's best to utilize the policy, I'm going to do that, but I'm not opposed to using other people's money.
Sure. Well, I would love to see the Fed and that apparatus go away. I'm not in that camp of somehow we're going to kill the Fed by using life insurance. You know, and that there's a book written that pretty much explains how that would work. And I think that's what people get that idea a lot. So for me, it always comes down to every individual situation and, you know, I compare the alternatives. None of this exists in a vacuum. So it's always got to be what compared to what. If I'm going to take a policy loan to do anything, what am I comparing the other options I have to secure that capital? to do that project. And if it makes sense to use the policy, then it's a fantastic way to do it. But it might not always make sense. Like you said, if interest rates are super low, or if cash flow is a problem, you know, some of these things might make other types of financing more appealing depending on the objective.
Yep. Let's move on to some of the success stories and fun stories. And that's probably the thing that I loved most about Pamela's book, which we'll have down below. I would encourage anyone who you're on this journey, like, check it out. It's an amazing book. And like, I love the examples that she gives. And I think there's a power in testimonials, because you're going to share how your love for sailing and how you're creating an asset and living more intentionally. And your life insurance policy is a foundation of that, which I think is great. And I'm sure you also have some other cool examples there. And so I would love to hear your personal story and how you've used it, but then how some of your other clients have used it, just because I believe there's power in different examples.
Absolutely, for sure. That's one of the greatest things about the Bank on Yourself Revolution book, is all the anecdotes, right? She just has tons of real examples of people and what they did. And I agree, it's super powerful.
So for me, when I started looking into these things, there was this intersection. I'm an avid sailor. I love sailing. I love going, long distance sailing. Not really. I love day sailing too, but really getting on a bigger boat and going for days and days. And so I mentioned control, this whole idea of being able to control things. And part of that for me that I discovered during this whole process was lifestyle design, that, you know, you can design any kind of life that you want. And I saw these policies as a way to be able to do that, to finance that endeavor. And so that was part of what led my decision to start my practice and become go into financial services and help people understand this concept and how to use it. But the other part was that probably a very unique part of my practice is I've been 100% virtual from day one. So, you know, but before it was cool during COVID, right? I joke a lot. I used to have to like explain painstakingly how to get on Zoom or whatever. And now everybody knows, right? So it's easy. But
everyone so thought you were crazy, and then they all called you during COVID and they're like, hey, how do we do this again? And
yeah, so, right. Yeah, exactly. So for me, there was this opportunity to do a couple of things. One is to be location independent and be able to travel and do some things. So I also became a certified sailing instructor and a U.S. Coast Guard licensed captain. And I own a sailing school today. And so I was able to, for instance, live and work from La Paz, Mexico. That's where I am today, and pursue this dream I had of being able to teach people to sail and enjoy this amazing sailing lifestyle, and help them understand Bank on Yourself and create policies and create lifestyles that they want, and understand that difference. Or that concept. And so the way I've used the policies over the years is obviously, so sailing is very seasonal. Financial services is not a consistent business, we'll say, right? Volumes increase at times and decrease at times. My policies allow me to smooth that out, right? So that when things are rolling in, I'm funding policies and building that up. And when things are a little leaner during months, I'm able to draw back out and then. And so I've talked about this concept of real estate people, big ticket item sales people, right? This is a concept all of them could use. So just this idea that you can use, and of course we've invested in real estate over the years. I've used my policies to buy boats, buy real estate, sell real estate, et cetera, et cetera. Our current project is a sailing school that we just launched. So, you know, that's what we're using it for right now. And so we continuously use the policy and pay it back. Use the policy and pay it back, use the policy and pay it back, but it's very project oriented as well. And it's, you know, it's been a fantastic way to manage that and build this lifestyle that is absolutely amazing for, you know, it's exactly what I want.
Yeah, that's amazing. And for those that, you know, really dive into life insurance and retirement, you know that life insurance can be called a volatility buffer, because if there's volatility in other assets, you can let those, you know, do its thing and utilize life insurance, and you know, you're just going to have better results if you don't have to take money while something is down. And the same thing goes with this could be a volatility buffer in business, and it creates, you know, it really creates you to live intentionally but you're creating that foundation and buffer to be able to do that. Love that example. You even said it before, we're all about intentional living. And I think intentional living is maybe a cute phrase, but part of the reason I'm so passionate about that is because of a lot of this education, is like knowing what I know, it's like I care deeply about someone's one life. And I love that when life insurance is set up and used properly, it can enhance their ability to live their one life. What are some other examples of how you've seen people in your own practice and in your own business, or maybe that you're connected with, how have they used their policy to live their one life better?
So lots of examples. One of the ones I like a lot is a couple that took some retirement money and funded a lump sum into a policy and bought an RV, took off across the country in their first couple of years of retirement and just traveled all over the country, sold the RV right at the end, paid the policy loan off. And, you know, at the end, after they bought the RV, traveled around, sold the RV, you know, at the end of the day, after paying the loan off, they have more than they started with in their policy, and, you know, that they can now use to supplement their retirement income. But it funded that dream, and that's what motivates me. It's, what's your dream? And can we use this tool to make that dream happen? That's what I love to do. Another example I love is a business owner client that I had way back at the beginning, over 10 years ago. He structured the way this policy worked, and he used it to expand his business. He had fast food restaurants, and he was opening new locations and using the policy to fund those startups. And then his whole business would repay him for that business loan. And then he reached out. We did a review here about maybe a year ago, 2 years ago. Well, now he's approaching retirement. And so we're restructuring some things. He opened a couple of new policies with some cash he had, and now we're positioning him to transition out of his business and into retirement. So I love this concept that these policies kind of leapfrog through your life, yeah. Right? So at this point in your life, it's good for this, but now things change, and the policy's still there, and it can adapt to the next change and the next change, and it's with you for your whole life. And so, you know, at the end, that death benefit is going to to the next generation. And it just kind of this, I love this concept that it's there the whole time, right? You know, however long you live, it's just leapfrogging through all the events.
It's amazing, John. What's been the biggest epiphany that you've gotten since you got into this business? So obviously the epiphany of like, oh, I love control. I love that I can control my money and all. But as you started to work with people, this is over 10 years in this specific field, anything that you've learned about yourself or about how money works that has enhanced your ability to serve people?
Peace of mind, right? I've watched it give people peace of mind where they can predict, they have something they feel like they can count on, and you see that confidence come out. And that was kind of my experience as well. As the years have gone by with my own use of these tools, my confidence is very high. And the peace of mind is very high. Right, I'm not really worried that my insurance policy is going to get wiped out. Or now that I understand really deeply how all this works, it's not a concern that's going to happen. Is it possible? Anything's possible, but it's extremely unlikely.
There's a lot of things that are going to happen before that.
Exactly. That's what I always say.
We got bigger issues. I think the obvious point would be, if insurance companies are failing, that means almost every other financial institution has failed. And I don't think the dollar bill is going to be something that's valuable, period. Yep. So I think
I say that all the time. If this particular insurance company that has been paying their policy owners out these dividends because they've performed better than expected for 120 years suddenly can't do that, I don't know what's going on in the world, but it probably doesn't matter.
Yeah. I think that's a great statement. I've seen some, and I've heard some crazy things of people that put in their will that if the rapture comes, where their money goes to save
forethought.
That's forethought. So, John, is there anything else on your mind that you'd, this is a conversation. I obviously want to put out as much different perspectives as possible. You can challenge me on things, But I before we end, is there anything else on your mind or anything else? It doesn't have to be life insurance related. Just kind of giving you the floor.
So I always like to make sure we talk about two things. One is do something, take action. Anybody listening that's been thinking about it, or you know, and take action might just mean have a conversation with someone, but take action, do something, and figure out whether this is right for you. And if it is, go forward, right? Because you know, the old proverb that the best time to plant a tree was 20 years ago, the second best time is today, right? So just take action, do something with it. And the second thing is tune out the marketing messages, including my marketing messages and Pamela's marketing messages and all the naysayers that are all over the internet now. Just tune all that out. Find somebody that you are comfortable and trust and have a conversation with them about what's important to you and what your concerns are and figure out whether this makes sense for you based on you doing an analysis, not based on whatever marketing messages are being bombarded.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. One of the most important things that we do, and I'm sure you do the same, is get really clear about what the client wants. And that becomes the ultimate metric.
Totally.
It's like my greater vision in Better Wealth is to make intentional living the new wealth metric, because I think it's disgusting that people trump the ROR or net worth or even cash flow, and that becomes the most important thing that we're optimizing around, and we're missing the actual human that we're quote unquote helping or serving. And so I think it's really important for you to decide what do you truly, truly want, and then reverse engineer your time, your money, your relationships, and your skill sets around that. And it's a lie that you have to be 65 or 70 to reach that. That's a lie. And it's meant to make lots of other people rich on that lie. And I think there's something really powerful when you can take ownership of your life and then figure out what's the best way to live that out. I think that's awesome. Do something and tune out the marketing messages, including this podcast. Now I will say, please subscribe before you tune me out, but subscribe,
absolutely.
Maybe share, because not everyone's going to tune us out, but I do appreciate what you're saying.
You know, another quip I'll throw out there that I use sometimes, particularly with younger clients, is don't build your life around an income source. Figure out what kind of life you want to have and then build an income around that.
Yeah.
Right. Which is the opposite of what a lot of people do.
Yeah. John, a question that I ask people that come onto our show for the first time, it's the legacy question. And it essentially goes like this. If this was your last day on earth and you're with the people that you love the most and you couldn't give them any podcast or book or blog article, you just had a conversation with them, what would you make sure to highlight in that last conversation with your loved ones?
So we've talked a lot about it today, and it's live the life you want to live, right? But I think the other thing I share with my own kids a lot is whatever I think I know for sure, I'm probably wrong. So you've got to keep an open mind all the time, because we're operating on a very small amount of information. So that's it. Live your life the way you want to live it and keep an open mind, because probably you're wrong about a whole bunch of things.
John, any final words?
I think that's it.
Right. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show. Really appreciate these conversations, and I look forward to sharing with you a project I'm working on that I think you can help me with. And it's essentially getting more real life stories of real people that use their life insurance policies. And I think there's really power of just examples. And so thank you for helping me on this mission. And I'm sure that there's more to come there.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me, Caleb. It's been great.
Thank you so much for listening to the Better Wealth Podcast. It would mean the world to me if you could hit subscribe, leave a review, and share this with the people that you know and love.